Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
It's time to hear the other side of the news.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. But do we even know who plants the seeds? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling proof.
The other side of the news.
Ignorance grows on the spirit like a tumor. Till freedom is a rumor.
All this recent talk about the Places to Grow Act by the Ontario government and the Greenbelt. What does that really mean for development right here in Hamilton? Well, if you tuned into the CBC about a week ago, you would have heard Andy Berry discussing that very question with the Minister David Kaplan. Here's an excerpt from that interview.
However, we would like to take you into the future, and the future of the GTA, and especially the band of land that surrounds it. All this week, Mary Weens has been taking us to the 905 region, where almost half of all new immigrants to Canada settle. Her stories have raised a lot of important questions, such as how can we accommodate those new residents without adding to the sprawl and the traffic already moving at a crawl on our major highways. David Kaplan is Ontario's Minister of Public Infrastructure Renewal. He joins me in the studio to talk about strategies to deal with the GTA's population boom. Good morning, Mr. Kaplan.
Andy, good morning. Great to be here.
You too. So spell it out for us. How will immigration change the GTA's population over the next, let's say, two decades?
Currently, we're the third fastest growing region in North America, and 3.7 million additional residents over the next 25 years. We've identified what we call 25 urban growth centers, but also environmental preservation, 1.8 million acres preserved around the GTA called the Golden Horseshoe Greenbelt.
But as we heard yesterday, what's likely to happen and has happened in other greenbelts is intensification south of the greenbelt, and then the intensification jumps on the other side of the greenbelt, so the housing and the development still go on.
Well, precisely we're looking to get ahead of that, and that's why the designation of these centers, the focal point for new growth, as well as new urban design. You know, one of the problems that we've had is we haven't designed our communities well enough so that they would be transit supportive.
One of the problems also is that in the past, developers have often called the shots. Yesterday, we had Rick Smith on, who is the Director of Environmental Defense. He claimed that municipalities eager for a new tax base, in fact, wind up shelling as much as $1.35 out to provide services, to provide sewers, to provide roads, transit, for every dollar that they earn in additional taxing. What do you think we'll mean by the GTA? Will it be north to Collingwood? Will it be out to Oshawa? Will it be west to, you know, Hamilton? I mean, what will the GTA, in fact, be?
We call it the Greater Golden Horseshoe, all the way from Niagara Falls up to Simcoe and Barrie and out to Peterborough.
Now we know that the Greater Golden Horseshoe is all of southern Ontario from Niagara Falls to Simcoe. Where do we go to get away from the smog and the development? Here in Hamilton, we have a major development on the East Mountain. When it was originally planned in the 1990s, they were looking at 5,000 units. Nothing has changed in the development plans to include the coming Places to Grow. There are still single-family big-box houses, and the only job development that is going on will be more big-box stores in concrete malls. It doesn't look like any intensification will be coming soon. In the planning and development meeting last week, Brian McCaddy and Dave Braden once again brought up some interesting questions when it comes to future development in Hamilton. Are we accommodating our future growth numbers?
Councillor McCaddy.
Madam Chair, I understand that the secondary plan or the neighborhood plan would have been in the works for a number of years, but I'm just trying to reflect on the GRIDS program and the nodes and corridors approach that we've chosen to take. My understanding is that Rymal Road will indeed be one of those corridors and that we'll be looking to service that area with transit. In order to do that, we need a certain density to support transit and to ensure that we make the best use of land. I wonder if I could ask staff whether they considered the GRIDS directions with this particular development, because to me it seems like a lost opportunity to have such a low-density development so close to a major corridor. It seems the antithesis of the GRIDS-style of planning that we hoped to undertake. And give me a sense of the timing on these things and what influence, if any, the GRIDS-style of planning is.
Well, Madam Chair, this is just a continuation of the existing street pattern, similar lots, and we haven't really looked at anything innovative other than what's there now.
I'm just trying to get a general sense, though, as now that we've passed GRIDS, are we able to go back and look at some of the planning that we have been doing in the recent past and make any changes to neighborhood plans or secondary plans, or at least have that discussion? Are we looking at, call it the old style of planning and the new style of planning, if that's, I don't know if it's an appropriate phrase, but the planning that's done before grids and the planning done after grids. Are we looking at planning committee here over the next couple of years, still dealing with old developments that don't have this new vision of nodes and corridors, at least the little bit higher density? We've heard that there is density planned for this area. Just a little bit of frustration that we're going to see this kind of stuff over the next, we have seen over the last 3 years that I've been here, with no real change. So are we able to revisit some of these things that are already been put in place? That's the question I have for staff, Madam Chair.
Mr. Marini is going to address that. Thank you, Ron.
I would venture to say that, in my understanding as a planner, first thing you have to do is your fundamental background studies before you do any meaningful public policy document changes. And grids being that fundamental direction by council will have to be implemented by Paul Mason's crew with a new official plan with relevant policies. But I'll take the question back to Paul, obviously, in terms of your frustration. But the other thing to keep in mind is as as Tim's people do community neighborhood plans, they'll be using the principles of the grid's system in those designs. So as we roll out the newer things where we have immediate control on doing the fundamental infrastructure planning and the community planning, then for sure grids will be rolled out. We'll have to wait, though, for the balance of the official plan to roll out and then the subsequent program of secondary plans to revisit these areas.
Agent Angelo Camaracci, would you like to address committee or are you satisfied with staff recommendation?
Morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. Just on Councillor McCaddy's comments, the neighbourhood plan initially called for very large lots in this area. We've scaled it down. I think staff has already looked at that. Secondly, I've reviewed the conditions. We're satisfied with the conditions.
Thank you, Angela. Councillor McCaddy?
Madam Chair, I continue to have some concern. I recognize that the planning has been done, but I'm wondering if we can really try and provide the planning department with a direction to try and revisit some of these neighborhood plans that have been developed over the last little while. And I recognize that there are commitments that have been made and that have set in place a particular development style and density. But, given where opportunities may be provided to go back and speak to the developer, speak to the community and say, look, we have the opportunity to get transit, perhaps in this case, along Rymal Road, but we need a certain density based on our understanding of what transit is supporting. Can we revisit some of these neighborhood plans that are perhaps in a whole block along Rymal Road? This is an example, not picking on Rymal Road, but have it here in front of us. There may be other areas where there's development that's been in the works for the last couple of years, hasn't come to this committee yet. I just want to see if before we go with the single-family homes on the densities that we have, such as the one here, and I recognize that it's denser than it was originally, which is nice to hear. Can we try and get back to that so we don't have any lost opportunities? So I'm wondering if maybe I can ask that broader question, just a quick comment from staff, whether there's possible to group some of these and revisit them where the opportunity exists, where a developer might be interested in working with us.
Tim McCabe's going to
address. Madam Chair, we don't need a resolution on this because we're committed and required to do this anyways as part of the Places to Grow. As Ron said, we need the official plan first, but a companion document with that is the intensification study. So the department will be re-looking at all these vacant lands and opportunities within existing neighborhoods and identifying intensification sites and what the most appropriate change in land use would be. So that is part of the work program. We need the official plan first, intensification study and the implementation of that, and the whole density in terms of the built-to line coming out of Places to Grow is all part of this package that we will be doing that, and the province is requiring us to do that.
Well, we just ask, Madam Chair, that be reflected in the staff report then. I don't see anything in this staff report that said, here's where we were before grids, before Places to Grow, here's where we are afterwards, and here's the gains that we've made, and this is how it relates to our nodes and corridors approach, and we're able to get transit because we've got this kind of density, or here's our target along a particular stretch of Rymal Road. Just so I can see that kind of thing, as I don't see it in this report here.
Would it be more appropriate, Councillor, that we direct staff to bring an information update on the process and what is being intended, as opposed to changing this report for all of the areas in Hamilton? Would that be more appropriate?
Probably just in each staff, not the staff report. It's here in front of us. We're dealing with it today. No, there's no issue with this one here. It's already clearly happening. But as we come forward, I'm hearing what Tim's saying, and I, you know, I know staff are going to be looking at that, but I don't see it as an example in this report. Maybe it hasn't started yet.
Okay, how about we leave it as direction for staff and let them come back with how they wish to address reporting to us, either with every application or a blanket update information to us. Would that be appropriate, Councillor? Councillor Whitehead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I look forward to more high-rises being built in Westdale as well. The reality, Madam Chair, is that in the areas that we represent, there's a lot more opportunity and expansion and development, certainly in lower ends of the city. So there's certainly different perspectives, and I always appreciate and welcome comments from councillors that represent the lower city, where there's very limited opportunity for further development. We have to be careful and sensitive in regards to the secondary plans and consultations have taken to date and what the expectations are within these development communities, within these neighborhoods. So I can certainly appreciate that we're talking about nodes and corridors. We're trying to expand and create more density to make it more viable for transit systems. But I just want to caution that there's a way to do it. Our staff, I think, are doing a very admirable job in getting there. My concern is that when you already have areas where there are neighborhoods developed, it just doesn't make sense in regards to the character of those particular neighborhoods. And I know that if you try to do that anywhere else in the lower city, you would have the same challenge to be intensifying any further than the character of that particular community. When you start building out from those communities, that's where the opportunity prevails itself. And I certainly hope and wish and expect staff to take those things under consideration in the context of grids.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor McCaddy, then Councillor Braden.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to pick up on a point that Councillor Whitehead made. Is he made the point that apartment buildings might be the solution here. I think it's that kind of a comment that's going to scare everyone away from intensification. It's a kind of absolute comment that intensification means 12-story, 20-story apartment buildings. That's why people are worried about intensification. But in fact, it means a very creative approach where perhaps it's townhouses, stacked townhouses, whatever it might be that can fit into the character of a neighborhood. But if we actually continue down that, reinforcing that view of intensification as apartment buildings, something that's scary to folks, then I agree quite rightly that it won't happen. We'll have a significant pushback from people throughout the city and particularly in existing neighborhoods. We are looking at quite a bit of intensification in Ward 1, and I invite the councillor to work with us on that.
Thank you. Councillor Braden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You really using this because the discussion is, and perhaps a good way, is becoming more philosophical than it is about this particular. That's, in fact, how we change, and that's how we get things on the table. My concern, going back to Mr. McCabe's comment, were if we're waiting for the intensification study and the density and then the node study, and then there's always a time period where developers have said, look, I've been working on this for 5 years. You can't change the rules on me, you know, 3 minutes before I'm ready to get approval. When really should we expect a sort of a more enlightened and I think changing kind of planning philosophy or paradigm? When will it actually be the common thing in this chamber to be then using that kind of criteria to assess planning applications like this? I'm not looking for commitment. I'm looking for a good guess. 2 years? Is it five? When is this likely going to happen that we are going to look at this and judge it differently?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I can probably give you a better than a good guess. I'd say it's a pretty excellent guess of 2 years, where we will have an official plan in place. It will be an evolving type of thing, where we're encouraging developers to submit rezoning applications or neighborhood plan amendments, where we see potential for intensification. When the official plan's done, that will have mandated intensification policies, certain locational criteria, certain land assembly type nature of properties, that when they come in for rezoning, then the official plan's going to direct it and require it, and we'll have a policy basis that we can say no to. So I think it's going to evolve over the next 2 years, but in 2 years, we will have the policy framework that we will have to report on and applications will have to conform with.
I just wonder, and I don't mean to speak for Councilman McCaddy or anybody else, but I want to know because the people like me are impatient, and I think, in fact, the staff are impatient. I think they want to move to where we want to go. I want to know if there's some interim vehicle we can use to jump. If we get an enlightened developer that comes along and says, look, this is still 1960s planning, we want to use the 2010, we want to do 64 units in a combination of stuff that's creative. I want this corporation to be sending out a message to say, we're there with you, developers. That's the kind of thing we want to do, rather than perhaps that I go through every single regulation and change it, and you might as well quit before you start. So what I'm trying to ask is, can staff help us help some of the people that want to be creative? So until that 2 years that you say that, you know, it should be in process, can we have another process going along with it so we can get some decent development?
It's a pretty broad topic, Madam Chair, but I think the answer is yes. I mean, we are developing concurrently with the official plan a new comprehensive zoning bylaw. And you've heard me talk before about the flexibility and the simpleness that we want to put in the new zoning bylaw. For example, multiple dwellings will be defined across the city as a building containing more than two dwelling units. So we won't have masonettes, block townhouses, stack townhouses. So we want creativity to come with architectural design and intensification. That in itself is going to give some incentive to developers to get away from the red tape and OMB appeals once we have that new zoning approach in place. And we're hoping that with the official plan, we will have the residential zoning in place as well. So we're going to have a lot more variety in terms of dwelling type and densities in normal residential zones. And it's going to be very few areas where you're going to have single detached only. And if we see a major project that's so exciting and is focusing on the intensification that we see for the future, we can also fast track those projects as well, Madam Chair.
No. This is important. Is that only going to apply to sort of greenfield new developments? You're going to go right across the city?
Right across the city.
Great.
Zoning change was cited as minor road changes, but actually it's a pretty major change. It's the development that's right at top of the Red Hill Expressway, right on the edge of the escarpment, right where there's quarries, underground springs, and the Taro Dump.
Develop Neighborhood Official Plan Amendment, Secondary Plan, and we have Brenda Keys. Would you please briefly outline for the committee the minor changes to the recommendation?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The changes that are proposed are minor and technical wording changes to essentially address traffic calming and the provision of infrastructure. So we were hoping that those could just be addressed through the final documents going to council. This report deals with the plans for the Nash neighborhood in the former city of Stony Creek. The plans include an amendment to the former city of Stony Creek official plan to incorporate a new secondary plan for the Nash neighborhood. The Nash study area is essentially bounded by the Niagara Escarpment to the north, Mud Street to the south, Upper Centennial Parkway to the east, and the Falkers Creek to the west. The entire study area incorporates some 370 hectares of land, a significant portion being taken up by the former Taro Quarry. The study process included setting goals and objectives and a future vision for the overall area, information collection through the preparation of a background information report, obtaining public input through two public information centers, the identification of issues and opportunities that help generate proposals and plans to be approved by council, which would ultimately be implemented and monitored. This overall study process began actually in the mid-1990s by the former city of Stony Creek. Their approval was delayed due to the completion of various studies related to the Taro East and West lands. Those studies have been completed, and the landfilling operation that's underway has been approved by the Minister of the Environment. So this particular secondary planning process has picked up from where that one left off and was reinitiated in 2005. It included data collection, the identification of issues and opportunities, a neighborhood background report, the preparation of four options for the overall Nash neighborhood, which were presented at a public information center on March 31st of last year. We obtained citizen input on those options and generated a preferred concept, which was presented to the public at a public information center on November 24th, 2005. following that meeting and the citizen input that we obtained from that meeting, draft and final policy documents were prepared. This particular public meeting is underway. The purpose of the Nash Neighborhood Secondary Study was to develop a secondary plan for the neighborhood that would establish the types of land uses that would be permitted, a transportation network, community facilities, infrastructure, and urban design standards for development. As we began our study, we gathered background information to help us understand the community, the study area, and the issues and opportunities that will impact urban development of the neighborhood and the secondary plan. Gathering this information helped us to identify the things that would influence the kind of development we can propose for the neighborhood, and these included such things as environmentally sensitive areas, the Niagara Escarpment, existing woodlots and hedgerows, the Davis Creek Subwatershed Study, the former Taro Quarries, TV radio antenna towers, as well as an earth station including satellite dishes. These items that I have just listed all have different requirements, such as setbacks from development, that have an impact on the type of design and land uses that we can propose for the Nash neighborhood. Through our research, we also identified a number of opportunities that the neighborhood presented that would help us determine the land uses proposed for the neighborhood. These secondary planning opportunities, including creating linkages to adjacent neighborhoods, integrating new parks and open spaces with existing natural spaces, conserving heritage buildings and environmental landscapes, enhancing physical and visual connections to the Niagara Escarpment and environmentally sensitive areas. From both the issues and opportunities identified, we were able to come up with four different land use options that we presented at the first Public Information Center. After receiving public input, we made the necessary revisions and came up with a preferred option, which was presented at the second Public Information Center. This was further revised and based on staff comments as well as public input. And what that brings us to is the proposed land use plan for the Nash neighborhood. As you can see from the plan, we have four residential densities proposed. The yellow color here is low-density residential development. That would be proposed at a density of 20 to 35 units per hectare. We have medium-density 1 development, which is essentially located along the collector roads, and this would be street-related medium-density development. We also have medium-density residential development at a density of 30 to 49 units per hectare. We are confident that these densities are transit supportive for this neighborhood. In addition, we have a large community park within the Nash neighborhood, as I identified earlier, as well as a smaller neighborhood park. Future neighborhood parks are intended to be constructed either within this special policy area or this special policy area to provide more parkland for the immediate residential area. We have a large environmentally significant area that essentially surrounds the community to the west and the north. Part of this incorporates the Niagara Escarpment as well as just a formal environmentally significant area that the limits of which were determined through the Davis Creek Subwatershed Study. In terms of commercial development, we have general commercial development along Upper Centennial Parkway and Mud Street, as well as some local commercial development on Green Mountain Road. We have some issues with regard to the realignment of First Road West as well as Green Mountain Road. In order to deal with the best location for these particular realignments, we have to deal with the Taro landfill site. None of the construction of the roadways, the realignments, could not happen until the landfill operation is completed and this overall area has been rehabilitated. In addition, it was determined that with the Red Hill Creek Expressway opening up in the next year or so, that traffic patterns along Upper Centennial Parkway as well as Mud Street may change as a result of the opening of that particular road system. So as a condition of development, a traffic study is required for First Road West as well as Green Mountain Road to determine the capacity and adequacy of these existing roads to deal with new development. And at the time of development of the Upper Centennial Parkway road system with respect to the new servicing that would go up this particular roadway, an environmental study would be done essentially to deal with this intersection. Finally, with respect to three special policy areas, we have one special policy area up here which deals with the antenna lands, the CH antennas, and essentially if that use ceases operation, then these lands can be developed for low and medium density development without an amendment to this plan. The special policy area B is to do with the Taro site. This area is intended for future public open space purposes once the landfill site has been rehabilitated. And this particular special policy area here is to deal with the Earth Station, which are large satellite dishes. That area could also redevelop for low and medium density development without an amendment to this plan. This concludes my presentation, Madam Chair, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Councilor Braden.
Thank you. Through you, Madam Chair, to the presenter. The expression was used that these were, I think, transit supportable, the densities.
Correct.
The question I have is, what are those densities? And the second part of the question is, seeing, and I don't know how much of this is all built out, but seeing in the bottom right corner an area where there's the former dump and other green areas, if in the whole neighborhood much of the property is not going to be built, do you therefore have to raise the densities in the part so that you can make a general comment? It's not meant to be a loaded question, but I'm looking for good professional data.
I understand. When we looked at the provincial direction, which requires a density of 50 units per hectare, we did have to increase the densities in this area overall and this area as well to get our density up to the 50 units per hectare. But recognizing the uniqueness of this particular overall neighborhood, of which 48% is either the dump, open space, or an ESA, the calculations to determine that 50 units per hectare includes essentially the urban area minus that area overall. So the 50 units per hectare does not include the total limits of the neighborhood. We didn't think that was realistic. We couldn't get the densities up, and part of the issue in this particular neighborhood in terms of wanting to get a higher density is the proximity to the escarpment and the bedrock that's underneath. In order to have high-rise development, you're going to have to be able to dig down deep enough for the foundations and the parking. So essentially, we weren't able to get the high density that we would have liked to, this being an opportunity similar to your discussion earlier, but we got, in our mind, a reasonable balance.
I appreciate the clarity of that, but can you go back to the transit supportable thing about you wanted to get the density higher?
Correct.
What level are you looking at to have it transit supportable, including two criteria? One is much of the area is not going to be developed, and two is, as far as I can tell, there's no decent jobs there. So we got two other parameters in making a transit supportable. One is no jobs. Two is much of it's open space. So then, what's the number then you would like to see as a professional to compensate for those two figures in terms of density?
I think you're looking for a number, and I don't think I can give that to you.
Or a range. No, I'm not trying to pin you to that.
Yeah, I understand where you're talking about the jobs. I think this is a very, unfortunately, this is a very constrained neighborhood, and in order for us to get the type of jobs to get 50 jobs or persons per from that perspective for transit supportive use, we didn't feel we were able to incorporate those types of uses within that neighborhood other than the commercial development that you see along Upper Centennial and Mud Street. The transit supportive nature that we're talking about is essentially for the residential community. This is essentially a residential community.
You know, we talked about someplace down in Stony Creek, and Councilor McCaddy asked those questions. What number are you as a professional suggesting we should have in an area that is exclusively residential and commercial? Right? So no big open space. What's the magic number there?
I would say the magic number is the 50 units per hectare.
It's 50?
50 persons per hectare,
so,
yes.
So if anything, this should be much higher. But
possibly, yes.
Right,
yes.
Logic?
It's 50 persons per hectare, yes.
And how many are we going for right now? Within the
50 persons
we're
per
going
hectare.
For 50 and we're
yes,
go.
We are.
Enough questions for now, Madam Chair.
There's a couple of things I have to straighten out right away here in concerning some of her points. If anybody's been on the mountain and they've seen the Ben Lomond apartment building, in fact, I don't think you can miss it. It's huge, and it's right on top of the escarpment. So that kind of refutes the argument that you can't build an apartment building right on the edge of the escarpment because it's been done and it seems to be working. 48%, well, okay, 50% of the land is not usable because it was toxic. Nothing has been mentioned so far about all the springs underground. And her argument about jobs, well, big box stores, retail sales, $7, maybe $8 an hour jobs, that's always been in the works. Nothing's changed with that. I remember hearing a lot of argument about they need the highway so they can develop this area so there would be jobs and a community that was very self-contained. The reality is nothing's changed. It's DeSantis doing exactly what they've always done as far as big, huge, monster homes. That's what he planned, that's what he's selling, and that's what's going in. You are listening to the O-Side Review every other Thursday afternoon at 12:30. Don't forget, next Tuesday at 12 noon is the regular Other Side program, and next Thursday will be another edition of Seeds of Hope. Redefining Radio.
CFRMU.